Oh, interviewing all of these butlers is making my voice go hoarse.
Have you found one yet?
I have a short list. It was much quicker once I found the ones that were willing to be paid with stories. Do you have any preferences, darling?
I don't care, so long as they don't lock me in the basement.
Well, they're next door. Let's get this over with. So, Mr. Jelly Bouncer.
Hello!
Actually, this isn't going to work. Next, please. Ah, hello, Mr. Lightfoot. My first question to you is, which is your favourite China Mieville novel?
China who?
You know, the fantastic author, new weird, science fiction, urban fantasy, gorgeous arms.
Oh, no, I don't read that kind of thing at all.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. This just isn't going to work. Next, please. Ah, Mr. Bumblebree. Could you describe Tom Hiddleston's perfection in 3 sentences or less?
He ain't perfect. Too skinny. Not like you, love.
Well, whilst I applaud your adherence to the remit of 3 sentences, I'm afraid this isn't going to work. Goodbye. Next, please. Ah, Mr. Middleton. What do you think of the new Star Trek films? Well, hopeful. And Prometheus? Have you read Guns of the Dawn by Adrian Tchaikovsky? Oh, what do you think about the main character? Well, you're not the most eloquent chap, are you? Oh, a cup of tea. How splendid. Oh, and it's perfect. You're hired. Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't had an awful cold coupled with a butler crisis. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. Please forgive the huskiness of my voice. Hopefully the sea air will help me to recover quickly. Seeing as we were in Cornwall already, I thought we should take tea at St. Michael's Mount today, one of my favourite places in the world. It can be quite a walk up the hill, but once you get here to the castle and can see the sea around you for miles, unbroken, stretching towards the horizon, you know that it's worth it. Do pull up a chair. The flagstone floor is too cold and hard to sit on. You might have heard the legend about the giant that once lived on the mount. Given my recent staffing change, I don't think we have to worry about that today. Ah, Middleton. You have a calling card. My guest has arrived, I take it. Fran Wilde. Interesting picture of a cloud and cephalopod. On your wings. Lovely. Do show her in, Middleton. For those of you who don't know, Fran Wilde is the author of Updraft, a fantasy novel recently published by Tor Books. She's also the host of the Cooking the Books podcast. Hello, Fran. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Would you like to have a cup of tea?
I would love one, thank you.
And how do you take your tea?
Oh, just a little lemon, please. No milk.
Lemon and no milk. I've been having a lot of lemon myself. I'm sorry my voice is sounding a bit husky. I'm not contagious anymore, though, so don't worry.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm not contagious either.
Hooray! Would you like to have a scone with your tea to make it a proper cream tea?
I would love one. I've heard that you make delicious gluten-free scones.
Oh, yes, we do. And, of course, here's some very nice strawberry jam and Cornish clotted cream, which is the best in the world.
I have some curiosity about this clotted cream situation. What exactly goes into this?
The cream, as far as I know, it is just cream. It's just kind of treated differently, like whipped. Well, not even whipped. You know, I'm actually horribly ignorant. I've been eating this stuff all my life, and I don't know the exact process involved, but I think it is just cream that is thicker than most other cream.
I've had it. It's delicious. It's sweet. But it the name just doesn't sound good to foreign ears, I'm afraid. And it kind of goes in the ear file where Vegemite lives, and they're completely unrelated and completely different, but somehow it's a marketing thing. Could we rename Clotted Cream, or would that cause me to lose followers?
Yeah, that would be the most terrible thing. I can imagine all of the Cornish up in uproar saying, but we had this before you had marketing. We don't want none of your funny marketing stuff in our Clotted Cream. No, it's something which has just always been that way, will always be that way, like Cornwall. So yeah, it's never going to change, I'm afraid.
I'm going to make myself a GIF that has a thumbs up and Clotted Cream underneath, just in case.
Well done. It's okay, Cornwall, everyone.
I love you, and I love the Clotted Cream.
Oh, and don't forget to put the jam on first. That's very important.
Oh, no. Oh, I messed it up already. Foreigners, we're terrible. Can I have another?
Have another one, yeah. Another one.
I don't want to do it wrong. I'm just going to stuff this one in my mouth first because it's so delicious. Pay no attention.
This is something that we love having kind of mock arguments about. Actually, they get quite heated for mock arguments about what goes on first, the jam or the cream. And I can tell you, you know, hand on my heart, that it is definitely the jam that goes first and the cream on top. And I'd imagine that about 50% of the people listening to this are currently screaming at the speaker going, no, that's so wrong.
Well, I noticed that you didn't tell me which to put on first. And that's kind of like an intelligence test.
Oh, that's harsh. Perhaps, I don't know. I would like to say character test, but that is harsh and cruel in a different way. Now, I just wondered how native you had gone.
Oh, that's all. No, I've only been here for a little bit, and let me tell you, it is beautiful here.
It is. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world. Now, you're not allergic to chickens or chicken feathers or anything like that, are you?
I have no discernible allergy to chickens or chicken feathers.
Excellent. They will just be over there in the corner. Although if people aren't allergic to them, people don't react to these, so you'll be fine.
Now, what kind of chickens are they?
Well, you know, I would love to tell you, but we don't really know. They're kind of a breed of their own, I think.
They look rather unusual. They're not quite bantams, and they're not... I don't know. And that one is behaving rather strangely.
Yeah, it's probably best not to stare too much. You never know what they might do.
In the US, you can hypnotize a chicken by staring at it.
No.
Yes, truth.
Really?
Yes. Yes, it used to be a big carnival act.
I'm not going to try that with my chickens because they're quite unusual and I would probably end up being hypnotized by them.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
So in my invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
I did, and I'm so glad you said curio because I was thinking of it as an artifact. And I have, having worked in the UK before, I have been told that I was spelling artifact wrong. So I don't think I will run the risk of spelling curio wrong. You use an I, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, good. Okay, there's always sort of a surfeit of I's going around with British words. And I will tell you what I was going to bring and what I have brought, which is this lovely peridot that I found. It's a pendant, and it is very, very old. It's been in my family for a very long time, and it's got a rather unique setting to it. I don't know if you can tell.
It's certainly very beautiful.
Yeah, and it's sort of a large peridot, but, you know, it's still not too clunky. You know, you don't want your jewelry, your family jewelry, to be clunky.
No.
So, yeah. Whimsical, that's what we're going for.
Oh, I do like a bit of whimsy.
Yes.
Though with my current husky voice, that does sound rather filthy.
Oh, we haven't even gotten to the filthy part yet. I can't wait.
Oh dear, I don't want to build up your expectations inaccurately. Well, it's a beautiful curio. Well, did you have something else in mind that you were going to bring but then changed your mind?
I had been thinking, I did a bit of sailing in my youth, and so I was thinking of bringing one of the witch glass balls, the ones that used to hang outside of fishing huts to catch the evil eye.
Oh, but yes.
I was worried coming over on the plane.
I can sympathise with that. I notice on your bio that you're a technology consultant. I don't suppose it's the kind of technology that is behind time machines at all?
No, unfortunately, we haven't had any luck with time machines yet.
Ah, so what kind of technology do you consult in?
I mostly do computer-related consulting, but again, not time machine computers. Web development, online communities sometimes, a little bit of future planning for best use of technologies, those sort of things.
I
do a bit of programming, and I was a games programmer at one point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So is it to do with the scalability of stuff for a company so they don't have to throw stuff out every couple of years if they're growing, that kind of thing?
Sometimes when I was doing a lot more hands-on programming, I was very focused on that because I didn't want companies to have to reinvent the wheel, especially the companies that I worked for, because I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. I tried to work with them on you know, goal setting and planning ahead beforehand. Even with games, giving games sort of a longevity and building them to last and expand is really important. Now, mostly what I do is talk with people and help them set goals and help them stay away from things that might be inadvertently bad for their business plan or bad for their future goals. The sci-fi parallel would be self-replicating armed drones. Those are never a good idea.
Never, ever. And where are the technology consultants in the books or movies that these are in to say, no, don't do this? Where are they?
You know, I think they're probably in management meetings all day and then nobody ever listens to them and they do what they want anyway.
So obviously we've survived a rather tumultuous summer with awards, and I've already seen people talking about awards for next year and I still haven't quite recovered from the last round. I was wondering if you could establish an awards category in any award of your choice, what would it be for?
Best scone. Are really good.
My mum would win that.
Yeah. I would probably go for best cephalopod.
Best cephalopod?
Yes, I like cephalopods. Yeah. Everything goes better with cephalopods.
I think that Gail Carriger would agree with you, actually. They are pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and Elizabeth Baer, and I can think of a number of other authors that enjoy their cephalopodian moments. So with Elizabeth Baer, I'm thinking of some short stories that are in the past. She wrote the Boojum. Have you read the Boojum stories?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I love those. It's not that obvious that these are cephalopods, but they could be.
So would it be the best representation of a cephalopod within literature, or just best cephalopod full stop, be it plush, be it on film?
Well, I wouldn't want to limit anyone from, you know, I don't want to be exclusive in a cabal type sense. So I would leave it open. But representation is a little bit edgy for me because my cephalopods in my book are invisible. So we'd have to broaden the category. Or we could narrow the category to best invisible cephalopod.
Yeah. That might be a little bit unfair.
It might be a little bit obvious, yeah. So we could definitely, I think, broaden it to, because I love the knit stuff that is, I don't know if you've been on Pinterest at all. That's sort of my overwhelming time suck down the rabbit hole. But there are people who've been knitting hats with, you know, Cthulhuian tentacles. I can't even say that word today. And there are these giant squid that have been knit and crocheted. They're all of the handcrafts, plus the sweaters. I mean, anything with tentacles on sweaters is great. Oh, and there's a fantastic cephalopod knit pattern for gloves and mitts, too.
Oh, wow.
So those should definitely be nominated.
I've just discovered the world of yarn, and it is vast and wondrous and glorious.
It's very relaxing.
Yeah, very.
Are you a knitter or crocheter?
Crochet. I've only just learnt this summer with my son.
Oh, great.
So I'm very much a baby yarner, but it's gorgeous. I love it.
What a fantastic thing to do together, too.
Yeah, it is. It's really lovely. This is a very serious question, so take a deep breath. Would you rather lick cream from the chest of Tom Hardy or Tom Hiddleston? I'm asking for a friend.
And now we are in the whimsy portion.
I can't stay away from it for very long.
I would have to go with Hiddleston, but it's a tough choice.
It is, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you know, I could do both if, you know, at a push.
Well, yeah, I mean, if both were here, we wouldn't want either one of them to feel left out.
No.
Yeah, and this would be clotted cream, not American-style cream, correct? Oh,
absolutely.
Just have to check because, yes. You know, the other would get really messy.
I had cream in America, and my British brain had some kind of terrible spasm. Is this cream? Have I done something wrong? Is it? It tasted very, very different. It's incredible the difference between the dairy products between our nations.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's you all pasteurize, though, right? Because I think some of it is the pasteurization process.
Yeah, a lot of it is pasteurized. I don't know if I couldn't put my hand on my heart and say whether clotted cream is. I would imagine it is.
And all of Cornwall shouts, no.
I know. I was just imagining the entire internet sending me emails that are outraged, saying, how do you not know this, Emma? I'm so sorry. As soon as we finish tea today, I'm going to hurry off and research this in person, because I feel like I'm letting down my heritage as a good Cornish lass.
One of the Toms with you, just for, you know, testing purposes.
Oh my God, my mind is filthy. Let's move on very quickly, otherwise I'm going to get into trouble. So I have a question from a very lovely lady called Minika, and she is in the Order of the Sacred Teacup, and she has asked, which dish from Updraft's world would you most like to try?
Oh, that is a great question. I think I would like to try the goose because I would like to see how you cook goose at high altitude. But also, it would need to be stuffed with some of Kirit's favorite foods, which are apples. So spiced apples in goose is what I would choose.
Oh, I'd like to try that too, actually.
Yeah.
That sounds really nice.
I wonder, I'm very curious because when I have had goose before, the skin has been very crisp, and that's been some of the best part. But a goose is also a very fatty bird, at least at our altitude. I'm guessing it's a little less fatty up there because of the energy required. And also, you know, it's probably a very different type of goose since they have other different birds up there as well. But I'm curious as to the taste. I like exploring, as we were talking about with the cream, the way that things taste differently in different locations.
Mm. So when I have a friend over to take tea with me, I like to ask people on the Twitters if there's something that they would like to ask if they had the opportunity. And I was inundated.
Oh.
So the lovely Chuck Wendig has asked.
Oh. You,
as soon as you preface anything with the lovely Chuck Wendig has asked, everyone's like, oh my God, what's it going to be? He would like you to tell a knock knock joke.
No.
So, can you think of any? Because I always forget them when someone asks me.
Well, okay, Halloween is coming up, so I'll try and think of a Halloween knock-knock joke. Halloween in the U.S. is the time when all of the bad jokes come into physical being and arrive at your doorstep demanding candy. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Dishes.
Dishes who?
Dishes, a very bad Halloween joke.
Oh, that is awful. Can I tell you my son's favorite one, which makes him laugh like a drain every time he asks it?
Yes, please.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
The interrupting cow.
The interrupting cow.
As you can imagine, for an 8-year-old boy, that is hysterical.
That's great.
In fairness, it was my husband that taught him. Somebody else, I have a feeling, I want to say Ayelatan on Twitter. Is that Natalie? I can't remember.
It is, yes.
Yes. She asked, do you really hate colours? Do you hate colours?
Don't hate colours.
Where does this come from? What is this about?
She's making fun of my sartorial choices.
One should never do such a terrible thing.
No, right? She is implying that I might only prefer to wear certain colors. I consider black a color, don't you?
Mm.
Yes, it's a great color. It actually, you know, in painting, if you have black, that's all of the colors mixed together. So actually, I love colors very, very much together, all of them. I also enjoy white and all of the variations between black and white. The grays are wonderful and blues are in there. And that's pretty much the range of things that I wear. I have branched out into yellow, but I had a terrible yellow dress disaster. So I'm sort of hedging my bets and going back to black. Would you like to hear about the yellow dress disaster?
I need to know now. I do.
I have, and I've worn it. It's in some pictures that have just been making the rounds on the internet, so you can see it. It's this great dress from ModCloth that has skeletons on it, bones. And the dress base is sort of a yellow, off-yellow, like you would see in a very old wall in an Italian church, kind of that mottled yellow, but it's beautiful. Mm. And then the skeletons are drawn in black ink. And I was so proud of myself to be wearing this color. And yes, Natalie, yellow, this particular yellow is a color. And I wore it to a reading that I was hosting at a bar in Philadelphia called Tattooed Moms. And Tattooed Moms is this great place. It's down on South Street. If anyone in your listening area is visiting Philadelphia, it's a load of fun to go see. And they have hired, for their second level, artists to come in and decorate the walls. The walls being a certain color of yellow that you might find in a church, for instance, an older church. You see where I'm going with this? They gave the artists these beautiful black Sharpie pens to decorate the walls with. And there is a picture of this. I went in and I stood with my yellow dress against these yellow walls with the black Sharpie ink decorations on both, and I looked like the Where's Waldo of science fiction and fantasy, and it's really hilarious. I'll try and find you a picture.
That is such an unlikely thing that would happen.
it's just what I get for veering out of black at all. So I learned my lesson. I still wear the dress. I love the dress. When I was touring with Greg Van Eckhout and Shauna McGuire just a couple weeks ago, for the launch of Greg's California Bones book, Dragon Coast, Shauna arrived at Borderlands Bookstore wearing a dress with skeletons on it. And I said, well, I have a dress with skeletons on it. I didn't mention that I had worn it a couple days before, and so wasn't wearing it because I'd washed it, but I had, been in pictures wearing it, so I didn't want people to think I was traveling with only one dress. And but she looked at me and she said, put the dress on, and you don't disobey Shauna McGuire.
No, you don't, no.
So I went into the office of the bookstore and went into the very back, but I closed the door, and the bookstore people let me know that that was okay to do. And I was changing, and I got pretty much all changed and was just sort of looking at myself in the mirror when one of the bookstore employees walked into the office. And so this dress has a history. It's got some sort of local curse to it.
I was going
to
say it's a curse. Yeah, that's a curse.
I've also, as I've been traveling with Updraft, I've been asking people to sign my book. And this is a silly thing, but the tour tends to go very quickly, and there are a lot of things that happen. And I wanted a memento to remember everything by, and getting everybody I sort of met and worked with along the way to sign the book was a great idea.
That is a great idea.
I would love to have you sign it. Would you mind? I've brought it. It's right here.
I would love that. And can I steal that idea? Because that is such a great idea.
Yeah, I think it has meant a lot to me. It's been, while I'm separated from my family or I'm on a plane, I can just sort of open up the book and read what people have written lately, which is wonderful. But the bookstore manager at Borderlands actually wrote, "Great meeting you. Promise I'll knock next time," which is, I thought, very sweet.
That is very sweet. And you'll never, ever, ever forget that every time you read it.
But it's, I'm going to post some pictures of, without, sort of, I'm going to try and post it from a distance so you don't see what people wrote, but the books are beautiful. I mean, it's just really, it's so nice to be able to open it and see all of the friends that I've made as I've traveled, and all of the great, remember all the great conversations that I've had with people just like this one. So thank you so much for signing it.
Oh, that is my pleasure. Tell me some more about Updraft.
Oh, Updraft is my first novel with Tor. It came out in September, and it is a book about towers of living bone rising above the clouds. I characterize it when I talk to people who are familiar with genre as a high-flying action adventure with squid, often. They're not technically squid, they're cephalopods, but they are giant, invisible, flying, carnivorous cephalopods, which makes them, in my mind, kind of interesting and dangerous.
I was going to say, it's scary?
Yes. Well, you don't see them until they open their mouths and they're about to eat you, so I'd say very scary. It's a bit like when you're going swimming in a lake or an ocean and you get that sort of tingly feeling on the back of your neck like something might be swimming up beneath you. So the people that live on these towers of living bone, rising high above the clouds, they fly between the towers, and they also use bridges, but they don't have wings. They have to make them out of bone, because that's the most available resource, and silk, because they have silk spiders that they use to produce most of their cloth. And the flying, I think, is one of my favorite parts of this book. The main characters, Kirit, who is about 18, and her best friend, Nat, who is a similar age, are about to make their way into the rest of the city beyond their home tower and their home quadrant. But to do so, they have to pass sort of what's called a wing test, which is a much more intense process than passing a driving test. It's more of a, can you work well within your community? Can you fly in a group? Can you not kill anybody while you're in the air? Those sort of things. Mm-hmm. And stuff happens before they can even get to the test. Things happen after. Things go badly for your heroine and hero, as you might imagine. And Kirit, being the point of view character, has goals that she really wants to achieve. She wants to be a trader. Her mother is a hero of the city because she's a really great trader. And Kirit wants to do the same thing, but standing in her way are the people who are punishing her for breaking a law that she breaks very early on in the book.
That sounds really interesting.
Kirit not being able to follow any directions whatsoever from other people, decides to take matters into her own hands, as one does.
Excellent. I've been seeing some really fantastic reviews for it, so I'm really excited to read it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I am hoping that lots of people read it and enjoy it. I love seeing the conversations that are going on about it. It's got layers to it, I will warn you. There are layers that will appeal to readers of young adult fiction. There are some things that are very different than some young adult fiction. And then there are layers of discussion about society and social engineering, as well as social climbing, towers, you get the climbing pun, and there are environmental things. There's a lot built in here when people discover all the different layers. One of my favorite interesting and somewhat critical reviews was, you know, when I first read this, I thought this was an easy read, and I wasn't I liked it and it was fun, but I wasn't totally impressed with it. But days later, I was still thinking about it and I realized what had happened and that there was much deeper there. And I went back and read it again. And it's that second read that is really getting me. Now I'm really interested in what people are getting out of the second read.
Excellent. And now that it's out there in the world, are you calming down again? Because it's a very stressful time. I'm just moving into my very stressful time. So, are you through it now? Are you able to relax?
I am through most of it. I did a bit of a trip. I visited some places that I haven't been, especially as an author, before. And I also did a lot on blog posts. I have been blogging and doing different types of correspondence for different social media and media outlets for a number of years. So blogging kind of comes naturally to me. And I made a vow to myself that I was going to try and do something different for each post that I did. And also so that it would not be boring for people, so that they, you know, when they saw me, they'd be go, oh, good, there's another post from Fran, not, oh, Lord, you know, she's had it again. So I did a lot of different things that are different for me. I took some risks. I've never posted my drawings before on the internet. Well, that's not true. I posted one a couple years ago about how to buy alcohol in Pennsylvania, which is a very fraught process. So, but I've never posted anything that related to my work. I usually post sketches about other people's things or things that I'm sort of poking fun at. But this month, in particular, over at Chuck Wendig's blog, I posted a story about how a book gets its title, which, as you know, is sometimes a very difficult process. Mm-hmm. And I was really nervous about that. And people were like, why? That's so silly. This is so great. And I said, because it's something that is very personal to me. And I did a lot of posting about somewhat personal issues and also just some fun posts. And I really made an effort to try and post about other people as well. I did a post on a baker's dozen of fantasy foodies who really get food right in their fiction. I did a post on Charlie Strauss's blog about 20 debut writers who are also happen to be women. I did, and I managed to get in about 120 other names into that post in the addendum. And I've done the last post that I did actually, and I did some posts on linguistics on tor.com talking about China Mieville and talking about Ursula Le Guin and how they use linguistics to change their worlds. And then the last post that I did where I was writing about crossovers and different books that cross different boundaries. I got in a number of different writers, including Elliot de Bodard and Max Gladstone and Elizabeth Baer and China Mieville again. I seem to come back to China Mieville a lot.
Oh, I do too. It's hard not to, really, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
He's like, he has his own gravitational well of awesome.
It really is. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, not all of his books are perfect for me. There are some that are much stronger for me than others, but I really enjoy reading when he has a new book coming out. I definitely look at it. I've got his short stories right now.
Mm. So I'm just going to pour one more cup of tea because there's a very important question I need to ask you.
Is it about Tom Hiddleston?
All of the important questions are about Tom Hiddleston. But this one is actually relating to the chickens, because when I have a friend over for tea, I like to ask them if they have a theme tune that would express their life. So I'd like to ask you, if you had to choose a song or theme tune for your life, what would it be?
I have been listening a lot to sort of a sci-fi mix that I made, and I'm going to have to go still, and I get made fun of a lot with this, but Starships by Nicki Minaj. It's not my favorite song by far, but every time I've been on a plane lately, and I've been on a lot of airplanes, I play it at takeoff, and it's just kind of fun to think of myself going up on a starship instead of on a plane.
Okay, so Little Chickens, could you sing? No, the chickens. I'm talking to the chickens.
Okay, yeah. No.
I can call you my little chicken if you like.
Well, because you don't turn me into one.
I can't do that. I'm not a witch. It's okay. So, Little Chickens in the Corner, could you sing Starships by Nicki Minaj for Fran, please? And there they go.
Oh, that was wonderful and slightly terrifying.
Yeah, it's kind of freakish how they know all of the songs. But yes, so there you go. So Starships as done by chickens.
Thank you. That is a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
So let me just check the tea. Well, oh, I'm afraid that is the end of the tea. The teapot is empty.
Oh, I'm so sad.
But the thing, that I've set up something quite special because we're right at the top of St. Michael's Mount and it is a bit of a climb to get up here. I've set up a slide from that window over there so that you can slide down to the shoreline where there is a boat waiting to take you back to the mainland. Oh,
thank you. I'm really glad you didn't go with the ejector seat.
No. And I've tested it myself. I know it is safe and it is a huge amount of fun. So all you need to do is, actually, I will just wrap a couple of these scones up.
Oh, thank you. So, thank you. And I'm going to, because I'm wearing a long skirt, so I'm just going to tie it up so it doesn't, you know, bunch as I go down the slide. I love long wool skirts, and I thought that would be appropriate to wear. And I've got actually my new vest on too, which is, it's lovely. And it's red, Natalie, just so you know. And it's got tails. I don't know how the tails are going to do on the slide, but the skirt will be fine now because I've got it all adjusted. So
excellent. Well, safe trip down the slide.
Thank you.
Hopefully, I will see you at some point in the near future.
I hope so too. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Take care now. Bye.
Bye. Whee!
Well, that worked perfectly. There she goes in the boat. Oh,
that's nice. It looks like some ladies have gathered on some nearby rocks to wave her off. Goodness, they're very forward. Well, I respect that. They know what they want, and it appears to be the man rowing Fran to shore. Oh, dear. One of them looks rather unusual. Middleton, could you get me the binoculars, please? Oh, no, they're mermaids, and not the nice kind. They're trying to tempt the boatman over to smash Fran's boat on the rocks. Middleton, do be a dear and go down the slide and chase those mermaids off. Oh, well, I suppose that is beyond your remit. I don't suppose you have a shotgun to scare them off. Oh, well, not to worry. Oh, it looks like Fran has it under control, actually. She's using that beautiful peridot and a mirror to focus the sun's light and attract lots of fish to the surface. The mermaids are going wild for them. That's it, ladies. Go for the fish instead. The boatman looks a bit disappointed, but at least Fran will get to shore safely now. Well, whilst Middleton tidies away the tea things, I would like to raise my teacup to Stephen Nelson, Cherubula, and Julie Thompson, the newest members of the Order of the Sacred Teacup. Should you wish to join the esteemed order, go to www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy. Now, where's Middleton got to? Middleton? Middleton? Middleton! You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman and co-written with Peter Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find previous episodes and www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy to become a Bless Poppet.